wort in the gallbladder, that helps break down fats and carry toxins from the liver, has antibacterial properties, and stimulates peristaltic action of the bowel, can become thick and sludgy after years of indulging in cheese, trans fats, and sugar. When bile gets sludgy, indigestion and constipation are common, and eventually the formation of gallstones can occur. You'll use a supplement during the first 30 days of your program to help decongest the sludge in the gallbladder. It contains herbs and vitamins such as dandelion root, milk thistle, taurine, lipase, and phosphatidylcholine. These herbs are cleansing to the gallbladder and liver, so there will be some die-off here too. That's why you'll want to work up to the antimicrobial gallbladder formula and red clover tea, which I explain further in part 2 of this book. Each one, in and of itself, can create die-off symptoms. In the second and third months of your detox, you will focus on cleansing and supporting the liver, which serves more than 500 functions, including assisting with metabolism, storing vitamins and minerals, and detoxifying hazardous compounds, as you've learned in previous chapters. One of your liver's many tasks is to recognize fat-soluble toxic substances such as heavy metals, pesticides, processed foods, alcohol, cigarettes, synthetic chemicals, medications, and the byproducts of stress hormones, and form them into water-soluble compounds that can be excreted via the bile and kidneys. To help support these liver pathways, I recommend taking a series of supplements during days 31 to 90 that include vitamins and herbs such as milk thistle, amino acids, B vitamins, vitamins E and C, artichoke, gotu kola, and Panax ginseng. Details are included in part 2 as well. Keep your bowels moving. When you begin to detox, your bile will release toxins, and this can result in diarrhea and other changes in your elimination habits. You might even get constipated for a short time because your body is getting used to digesting new foods and going without others that were once staples in your diet. As we've discussed, a daily bowel movement is essential to overall health, but 2 to 3 times a day is ideal, especially when you are detoxing. Even if you are consuming adequate amounts of fiber in fruits and vegetables and using the bathroom every day, I recommend added fiber in the form of 1 to 2 teaspoons of organic ground flaxseed daily, either in water, mixed with a hot cereal, or sprinkled on salads and vegetables. It not only helps you stay regular, but also removes mucus, yeast, and byproducts that have built up on your colon walls. If you're constipated, you will recirculate toxins and feel worse. Remedies for constipation are magnesium citrate, triphala, probiotics, or allopharics. Avoid supplements containing psyllium unless you have diarrhea, because it can create more gas and bloating. If you're still constipated after using flaxseed, add an herbal stimulant or magnesium citrate. For additional supplements that can help ease constipation, turn to chapter 8. Purify your lungs and breathe easy. It may surprise you to learn that 75% of the toxins you eliminate will leave your body as you breathe, since your lungs filter out polluted air, foreign matter, and organisms that make their way in through the nose and mouth. When you inhale, oxygen enters the lungs and passes back out through tiny air sacs called the alveoli. From there, the oxygen travels to your blood through capillaries, where it's then carried to the heart to bring oxygen to your tissues, cells, and organs. When you exhale, the diaphragm moves up into the chest cavity. This forces air and carbon dioxide, a waste gas product, to be released from the blood and carried to the lungs for removal. Many of us are what I call lazy breathers, in that we tend to hold our breath throughout the day and breathe from our chests versus through the engagement of our abdomen and chest as our bodies are meant to. It's important to be conscious of how you breathe, not only for the sake of this cleanse, but because it greatly impacts your health long term. My suggestion is to focus on deep breathing at intervals throughout the day. To do this, inhale starting from the belly up to the chest, and slowly, to the count of 10. Hold your breath for 10 seconds. Exhale to the count of 10, starting from the chest and then down to the belly. Repeat 10 times, 3 times a day. Not only do you bring more oxygen into the body this way, but you'll feel calmer and more focused. Deep breathing floods the body with more oxygen, which increases blood flow and clears carbon dioxide. More oxygen releases stress and anxiety by increasing neurochemicals that make you feel calmer and focused. It also alleviates muscle tension and ushers out toxins from the body. You can do this at work or at home, or go outside for a break and just breathe. Cleansing the lymphatic system and skin. The lymphatic system is composed of lymph nodes, ducts, vessels, the thymus, spleen, adenoids, and tonsils to move lymph fluid through the body. The lymph doesn't have the luxury of a muscle such as the heart to pump blood, so motion is needed by the joints and muscles to move lymph upward to be filtered by lymph nodes at the base of your neck. Sweating through the pores of your skin is another way that waste filters out of the body. And exercise is one of the best ways to move lymph through both motion and increased sweat. Brisk walking, swimming, isometric exercises, qigong, yoga, and even marching in place while you watch your favorite television show are all fine forms of exercise. Massage and deep breathing exercises also support your lymphatic system. Saunas and Epsom salt baths help with detox too, though those with more serious issues like autoimmune diseases, including MS, may not be able to tolerate the heat, which may do more harm than good. Another simple practice that can help to increase your lymph circulation is dry skin brushing. You can buy a dry skin brush at your local health food store or online. This technique moves the lymph toward your nodes so they can filter pathogens and waste, a process called lymphatic drainage. Doing just a 5-minute dry skin brushing can bring the same advantages for your immune system as a 20-minute aerobic exercise. It also removes dead skin cells and promotes new cell growth. Before getting into the shower, brush your skin, starting with the bottom of your feet, with short, gentle strokes up toward your heart. Brush up your legs, up your back, and then over your shoulders and down to the upper part of your chest. Brush up your arms to the heart. Do not brush downward on your face, as the bristles can scratch. Brush for a total of 3 to 5 minutes, and be sure to brush gently. Lymph fluid sits right under the surface of the skin, so there's no need to do this in any vigorous way. Another way to support this part of your detox is to use an ionic foot spa, a cylinder-shaped unit that you put into a foot bath filled with water. See resources on the enhancement PDF. The ionic spa, through the electrolysis of water, produces positively and negatively charged ions or particles that are absorbed through the skin. This can improve cellular functioning and boost your energy, so it's easier for cells to purge toxins. Like dry brushing, you don't need to overdo this technique to gain benefits. I suggest using the unit once every 10 days. Using antifungal supplements. For 90 days, I'd like you to take an antifungal supplement that's either herbal or pharmaceutical. Herbal and prescription-strength antifungals are both effective, though herbal antifungals are, in my opinion, safer, as the pharmaceutical antifungals can sometimes have unintended effects on the liver. Herbal antifungals. Herbal antifungals are readily available. You can find many of them at your local health food store, on internet warehouse sites such as Vitacost.com, or at a health practitioner's office. I have found the following brands to be the most effective for my clients. See resources on the enhancement PDF. Candida ABX from Quintessential Healing. Candida Cleanse from Rainbow Light. Candida Support from Now Foods. What I love about these remedies is that they have antifungal properties that target yeast overgrowth, but also contain substances that are antiparasitic, antibacterial, and antiviral, You'll kill a lot of bugs with one treatment. Work up to the recommended dose slowly by starting with the smallest suggested amount. And before taking any antifungal remedy, make sure that your bowels are moving daily. If you're constipated before starting my program, take a week to first regulate your bowel movements so you're going to the bathroom every day. If you have trouble finding any of the herbal products I listed above, look for yeast-eliminating items at your local health food store that have at least 3 to 4 of the following ingredients. Oregano oil, pau d'arco, lapacho, caprylic acid, cellulose, black walnut, protease, garlic or allicin. Other effective ingredients include grapefruit seed extract, Oregon grapefruit, olive leaf extract, philodendron extract, coptis root, gentian root, berberine sulfate, ginger. What about biofilms? A lot of my clients ask if they need to take a specific enzyme supplement as part of my Candida program to break down a component of Candida called biofilms. A biofilm is a polysaccharide and protein matrix that acts as the fungus's protective shield. All microorganisms, including yeast, bacteria, and viruses, create them to hide from our immune system. Enzymes are typically suggested to break through Candida biofilms, but I find that oil of oregano and protease, both of which are included in my formula Candida ABX, are plenty effective. Also, during my 90-day program, you'll be taking other products that have enzymes in them, like hemicellulase, cellulose, and protease, which break through the cell wall of Candida. Whereas, not all antimicrobial herbs are effective at doing this. For over 20 years, clients have shown effective results by using everything from herbal antifungals to pharmaceutical antifungals, which we'll discuss next, without needing a specific biofilm product. Pharmaceutical antifungals. Prescription-strength antifungals include nystatin, diflucan, fluconazole, nizoral, ketoconazole, sporanox, itraconazole, and lamisil, terbinafine. These are good choices if your symptoms are chronic and severe, as with psoriasis, MS, fibromyalgia, lupus, and asthma. If you're in a wheelchair, however, nystatin and diflucan may be too strong for your body to handle, since your circulation is compromised and toxins can't exit your body as efficiently. In this case, a probiotic, such as Flora 2014 by Innate Response, is a safer choice. Also, because these antifungals require a prescription, I suggest talking to your physician about your condition to see if she is open to working with you. Naturopaths in some states, like California, can prescribe pharmaceuticals too. While herbal antifungals are effective, they are not as concentrated as pharmaceuticals, and so you'll usually see results more quickly with a pharmaceutical. Be sure to discuss the side effects of these drugs with your doctor. I'd suggest using nystatin and or diflucan if you go this route, as they've helped many of my clients. Nystatin is a concentrated extract of a soil-based organism that works by directly killing yeast. It comes in pill or liquid form. Do not take liquid nystatin. It contains sugar, which will only feed yeast. As the authors of The Yeast Syndrome write, nystatin is virtually non-toxic and non-sensitizing. All age groups accept the drug without major side effects, even on prolonged administration. Nystatin is not initially well absorbed into the bloodstream, but with prolonged use, it does get there. The problem is that most doctors prescribe nystatin for less than 6 weeks, and you'll only see results if you use it for 3 months to a year. As for diflucan, fluconazole, this is a synthetic antifungal drug that is effective against systemic Candida overgrowth. It is much stronger than nystatin, but also more toxic to the liver. If you use diflucan or any other systemic antifungal, Nizoral, Sporanex, or Lamisil, for more than a week, be sure to have your doctor test and monitor your liver enzymes. If you have symptoms of severe depression and or anxiety, a mental illness, or autoimmune disease, you can still use Diflucan to jumpstart the eradication of the fungus. I suggest taking 150 milligrams Diflucan for a limited time only, 3 pills total, 1 pill every 3 days, and then switching to an herbal antifungal, such as Candida ABX, or to nystatin. Diflucan primarily targets Candida in the blood, whereas nystatin permeates the areas of the GI tract where yeast overgrowth usually originates. Adjusting your diet during a detox. As you take antifungals, you'll also be on an anti-Candida diet that I'll explain in more detail in part 2. Here, you'll eliminate all sugars, dairy products, refined carbohydrates, gluten, corn, and alcohol. You will also eliminate all yeast-containing and fermented products. These don't directly feed the yeast in your body, but create an allergic or sensitivity response. So it's good to get rid of them to keep your body as clean as possible. Killing off yeast overgrowth is hard work, but the detox process is proof that you're making great progress. Supporting your pathways of elimination and whole body with the right food is half the battle. Let's now take a more specific look at what it means to modify your diet to keep your yeast levels under control. Encouragement from Albert. The Candida ABX supplement is a wonderful product that really works. My husband has had celiac for 10 years and strictly eats gluten-free. He also had stomach issues and problems digesting dairy and chicken, but this too has improved by following your program. 5. Starve the yeast. Nourish your body. What you eat, both on and off my 90-day plan, is crucial to starving the yeast in your body and keeping future yeast from taking over. Because nutrition is always a sound foundation for good health of any kind, after 3 months, I'll ask you to adjust your diet to fit a broader but still clean and low Candida menu. Everything you need to know about the specific foods you can and can't eat is detailed in part 2. But I'd like to talk here about what you'll generally keep in mind when following a healthy diet on my protocol now and for life. I'm willing to bet that revamping your diet will transform your life in more ways than you realize. The best way to look at these changes is to realize that a healthy diet doesn't have to be about deprivation. It can be inspiring. Adopting a new way of eating is an opportunity to learn how to mindfully shop, cook, create new recipes, and share your lifestyle with your loved ones so that everyone benefits. It's also a misnomer that eating healthy won't taste good. It's just the opposite, actually. Your taste buds change when you eat well, and you actually crave more nourishing foods. I guarantee that educating yourself about what goes into a diet that fuels the energy, mobility, and strength to live your best life will urge you to make the best choices you can. You are what you eat. Prior to treating myself for Candida, for as long as I could remember, I'd been sick. As a child, I was riddled with colds, flus, and sinus and ear infections. Throughout my life, I was prescribed more than 56 courses or shots of antibiotics for various ailments. My diet, until the age of 18, consisted mainly of processed foods and sweets. I had a single working mother, so I ate a lot of canned foods like Chef Boyardee, Kraft macaroni and cheese, and frozen TV dinners. I was addicted to sugar, and every day after school, I went to 7-Eleven to buy candy or treats like Ding Dongs, Twinkies, or Pop-Tarts. I easily devoured something sugary 2 to 3 times a day, and by the time I was 13 years old, I had 15 silver amalgam fillings to show for it. When my body collapsed from the Epstein-Barr virus, also known as mononucleosis, at the age of 18, I believe this was my immune system's way of crying uncle. Usually, 3 months of bed rest helps you heal, but it took me 3 times as long. After seeing 8 different specialists, taking over 30 prescribed medications, and searching many months for answers on how to get myself well, I was still exhausted and suffering from brain fog, disorientation, constipation, shortness of breath, and dizziness. I had reactive hypoglycemia, dealt with random fevers, and was achy all over. I just didn't feel good in any way, shape, or form. Needless to say, this wasn't normal. Serendipitously, as I was hunting for answers in a bookstore one day, Dr. William Crook's book, The Yeast Connection, caught my eye. I scanned through the pages and went right to his questionnaire, which I've included in the introduction of this book. I literally began to cry as I read down the list of symptoms. I had far too many of them, and it seemed stunningly clear that my EBV and Candida were in cahoots. I decided to take a leap of faith and try Dr. Crook's program, which consisted of following an anti-Candida diet that included no refined sugars, dairy, white flour, or alcohol, and taking an antifungal remedy called Nystatin. One long year later, I had regained my health. In that time, I learned an enormous amount about the role of diet in ridding the body of infection and inflammation. Unfortunately, I didn't realize how absolutely essential it is to stick to a maintenance plan after healing. And so I went back to my old habits of eating gluten, dairy, and sugar. I also didn't know that yeast overgrowth could roll into a debilitating autoimmune condition. 6 years later, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. As I look back, the writing was always on the wall about the trajectory my body would take. I was a sugar addict until the age of 18, a type A perfectionist with high periods of stress, and I was sick all the time with colds, ear problems, and sinus infections. I was continually put on antibiotics and steroids, which fuel Candida. I had a mouthful of silver amalgam fillings, which added to my heavy metal load. Then EBV surfaced, which is common in those with MS. I'd also been put on several medications when my EBV wouldn't lift, since the doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, and these invited more symptoms that fueled Candida. All of these factors, over time, disrupted my microbiome and weakened my immune system until it simply stopped functioning as well as it should. I also believe that EBV doesn't really take down a body as hard as it did mine without Candida overgrowth. It's hard to know which comes first, the yeast or the EBV, but I feel they go hand in hand. As a naturopath who uses sound nutrition to help heal the body, I know firsthand the extent to which the food we put into our bodies isn't necessary only for survival, but to create vitality and optimize the function of more than 300 trillion cells inside us. The digestion of food, as it breaks down into vitamins, minerals, fatty acids, and glycerol, has a complex chemistry. And what we eat can alter that chemistry, either positively or negatively. Sadly, the average American diet consists of large amounts of trans fats, refined sugar, refined carbohydrates, corn, gluten, soy, caffeine, and alcohol, not to mention the chemicals and preservatives commonly found in processed foods. How can your cells thrive on food devoid of nutrition? They can't. It's a mistake to think that eating the wrong food will not harm you. The equation is very simple. Trash in equals trash out. A good diet is one of the most important means to prevent disease, as well as heal a diseased body. What you eat can either weaken or rebuild your immune system, speed up the aging process, or slow it down. We can attribute some of the increase in health problems, like allergies, diabetes, neurological disease, heart disease, mental illness, autoimmune diseases, and cancer, to unhealthy diets. The great news is that you have control over your food choices. Once you educate yourself about the problems you're facing, you can make the necessary modifications and quickly notice improvements. 10 foods that upset your body's balance. There are 10 food categories that can feed unhealthy candida levels in your body and or encourage poor health in general. Refined sugar, trans fats, refined carbohydrates, dairy products, certain and excessive amounts of animal protein, excess caffeine and alcohol, food allergens, gluten, and artificial sweeteners and sugar alcohols. 1. Refined sugar. Far too many packaged foods in your grocery store, from canned goods to breads to seemingly benign crackers, contain sugar. And as you know, Candida thrives on it. In fact, researchers at the University of North Carolina found that a startling 68% of products in the U.S. food supply contained some form of sugar. The United States is a nation addicted to sugar. In 1890, the average American ate 10 pounds of sugar a year. Today, that figure is more than 150. Perhaps it shouldn't come as a surprise that a 2016 study, published in the Journal of Medical Mycology, compared the prevalence of Candida in the oral cavities of diabetics and non-diabetics, and found that the level was higher in diabetics. Researchers concluded that there may be a positive correlation between glycemic control and candidal colonization. Whether it's disguised as sucrose, fructose, dextrose, glucose, evaporated cane juice, high fructose corn syrup, lactose or maltose, refined sugar, which is usually extracted from sugar cane or sugar beets, is one of the most harmful substances you can consume. Sugar has absolutely no nutritional value on its own. And in fact, it has a negative value in your body. It depletes the vitamins and minerals needed to sustain health. It wreaks havoc on the pancreas, which controls blood sugar levels, and weakens the immune system. 2. Trans fats. Trans fats are obtained by infusing hydrogen into liquid vegetable oil, causing it to solidify. This is done for the sole purpose of preserving processed foods for a longer shelf life. They're also used as binders and fillers in pastries, breads, crackers, processed foods, microwave popcorn, chips, cookies, and margarines. In fact, the latest research shows that margarines made with trans fats, not butter, are the real cause of blocked arteries. They're difficult to metabolize, and so they collect in your body's fatty tissue. Trans fatty acids are major contributors to heart disease, adverse effects on the brain and nervous system, diminished mental performance, increased risk of depression, cognitive decline, and even Alzheimer's disease. Keep your eyes peeled while reading labels. Any food that lists partially hydrogenated or hydrogenated oil among its ingredients contains trans fats. Thankfully, you won't have to wonder about whether your food contains trans fats for much longer. The FDA has declared that all food companies must eliminate trans fats from their products by 2018. Of course, food containing them may still linger on grocery store shelves for a while, so it's important to read labels carefully. 3. Refined carbohydrates. Refined carbohydrates, such as white flour, white rice, and refined grains, are commonly found in baked goods and desserts, breads and crackers. I refer to refined carbohydrates as glue and goo because they coat the lining of your gastrointestinal tract in a sticky way and interfere with your gut's ability to absorb nutrients and eliminate waste. They also irritate the lining of your gastrointestinal tract, which contributes to leaky gut syndrome, and ultimately pave the way for inflammation and candida overgrowth. If you read the ingredients label on a bag of flour, regardless of whether it's white or wheat, you will often find that it's been enriched with vitamins and minerals. This sounds better than it is. The truth is that when the flour is bleached and refined, it loses important micronutrients, fiber in particular, which are still lacking after it's been enriched. Fiber is essential for proper elimination and for keeping blood cholesterol levels in a healthy range. Refined carbohydrates contribute to the alarming number of clients I see with constipation, irritable bowel syndrome, and imbalances in blood sugar levels because they convert rapidly to glucose or sugar. Ingesting sugars on a continual basis can disrupt the pancreas and blood sugar function. This leads to both reactive hypoglycemia and diabetes. Reactive hypoglycemia and most cases of diabetes occur when your cells become resistant to insulin from the continual ingestion of refined carbs, soft drinks, candy, and other sugary foods. 4. Dairy products. Cow's milk is one of the leading food allergens, and lactose, a sugar present in milk, feeds Candida too. Consuming cow's milk and the products that contain it, such as ice cream, yogurt, and cheese, frequently causes sinus problems and gastrointestinal complaints. Asthma, headaches, joint and muscle pain, depression, lack of energy, and skin concerns are also attributed to dairy allergies, as is hyperactivity and irritability in children. Having a milk allergy means that the body doesn't recognize the protein found in cow's milk, which it sees as a foreign invader, and defends itself by creating an allergic response. This autoimmune reaction generates inflammation. However, having a milk allergy is not the same as having lactose intolerance. Lactose intolerance means that you lack the enzyme called lactase that breaks down lactose. In fact, researchers from the UK have estimated that 70% of people worldwide stop producing lactase sometime during childhood, increasing the likelihood of some degree of difficulty digesting milk sugar. Lactate milk, in which the lactose or milk sugar has been removed, was created for those who are lactose intolerant. However, removing lactose doesn't solve the problem for everyone who has a sensitivity to cow's milk. I prefer that you steer clear of both milk and lactose-free milk, since milk proteins can cause sensitivity and mucus in the body. It is commonly believed that drinking milk is the best way to get calcium. After all, many doctors advise us to drink milk and to give our children milk. Women are especially targeted because we are more likely than men to develop osteoporosis as we age. Yet the fact is that milk is actually not a great source of calcium. Only 30% of the calcium in 8 ounces of milk is absorbed by the body. Pasteurization destroys the enzyme phosphatase. To maintain proper pH balance, the blood robs minerals, which are alkaline, from the body's biggest storehouse of minerals, the musculoskeletal system. We are told that drinking milk is the best way to replenish calcium and other minerals needed for strong bones. I have found that after my 90-day program, small amounts of unsalted organic butter and ghee are well tolerated. Small amounts of goat and sheep's milk and cheese can be okay too. For most people, both goat and bovine dairy products create inflammation, but there are exceptions. Whereas dairy products from cows are congesting to the body, goat and sheep products are less allergenic, so easier to assimilate because of their molecular structure, which is similar to human milk. After the program, some clients like using Garden of Life's Goatine, a high-potency goat dairy powder that's pre-digested so it's easier to consume. Everyone is different, so pay attention to how you feel when it's time to test out foods after your 3-month cleanse is done. What's interesting is that humans are the only species that drinks milk from another species. And how do cows get their calcium? Not by drinking milk from another species, but by eating grass, if they're humanely raised. I'm with the cows on this one. I believe it's better to get your calcium from organic plant sources than dairy products, contrary to what the media and most medical doctors would have us believe. Plant foods that are high in calcium, higher in some cases than cow's milk, include dark green leafy vegetables, sesame seeds, almonds, broccoli, and canned salmon and sardines. All of these also contain trace minerals that help calcium enter your bones. 5. Certain and excessive animal proteins. Protein is essential to heal and repair the body. But if you eat animal protein, be selective about the source of your meat. When not raised organically, most pork, beef, chicken, and turkey contains antibiotics and hormones, which, as we know, can tip the scale in favor of yeast overgrowth. In addition, pork contains higher concentrations of parasites than other animal protein. And red meat is more acidic to your body chemistry, especially when cooked beyond medium rare, and when eaten with grains, beans, or starchy vegetables. Organically raised chicken and turkey are better choices. On the program, you are allowed to eat animal protein and fish. Unfortunately, fish also contain toxins because our oceans are polluted with heavy metals and chemicals, so you want to make smart choices here. Shellfish are particularly high in contaminants, as they're bottom feeders and absorb higher concentrations of chemicals and mercury. Wild-caught salmon, trout, halibut, sole, sardines, and cod are better choices. But even so, finding clean sources can be a challenge. Swordfish, mackerel, shark, tuna, and tilefish are highly contaminated with mercury and should be avoided. 6. Caffeine. Caffeine, whether in the form of coffee, soda, tea, or chocolate, raises blood sugar levels and is acidic. This is not the goal, since boosted blood sugar feeds yeast and a generally acidic environment contributes to inflammation. It stimulates the adrenal glands to release cortisol as well. Small amounts of caffeine can be beneficial for the body, but overconsumption of caffeine can negatively affect the adrenals, which we depend on for optimal energy. The rise in cortisol also elevates blood sugar, which feeds candida. If you do drink coffee after your 90-day program, be sure to buy organic beans. Non-organic coffee is the most chemically treated food product in the world, and detectable levels of mold are often found in lower quality beans. Decaffeinated coffee is even worse because of the additional chemical processing it undergoes to remove the caffeine, which is naturally occurring in the beans. If you purchase prepared coffee, I recommend switching your order to espresso, which is less acidic than filtered drip coffee. Drink no more than a cup of organic espresso a day to avoid upsetting your adrenal glands and blood sugar levels. After the cleanse, one cup in the morning is best for energy and focus. If you drink a second cup in the afternoon, you'll also be too tempted to reach for sugar. Organic white tea, which has small amounts of caffeine, is an excellent alternative for coffee during and after your cleanse. Not only is it a blood cleanser, it will not disrupt your endocrine system the way coffee can. 7. Alcohol. All alcohol is a neurotoxin that goes directly into the bloodstream, creates an inflammatory response, and depletes vitamins and minerals in your body. However, while you're on my 90-day program, if there's a day that you decide to indulge in alcohol, it is better to drink a dry spirit like vodka, because it is distilled and has less sugar compared to wine, beer, sake, or champagne, all of which are fermented and contain sugar that quickly feeds your yeast. After the program, I suggest testing the waters by having one or two drinks a week if you'd like. If you feel reactive with a headache, GI upset, or hangover, consider drinking less or none at all. Dry spirits with club soda or a splash of cranberry are a better choice because they don't contain sugar. 8. Food allergens. I find that food allergy tests come with many false positives. The reaction that most people are having is from acute food sensitivities that will dissipate once inflammation and infections are dealt with. Food allergy tests also flag foods that clients eat regularly as being a problem, but that is really not the case. Many of my first-time clients come in with their results showing that they can hardly eat anything, which leaves them feeling sad and deprived. I prefer to jump right into my 90-day program, which gets rid of dysbiosis and inflammation. If there are unresolved symptoms after 90 days, That would be the most accurate time to do a food allergy test. What's the difference between food allergies and food sensitivities? A food allergy is more severe. It occurs when an immune system recognizes food as an invader and uses its antibodies to fight the allergen by releasing chemicals called histamines. Inflammation results, causing pain, rashes, and for some, severe reactions such as anaphylaxis. Food sensitivities are more benign, causing bloating, gas, and headaches. The challenge with food sensitivities is to find out what is bothering your system, because symptoms can be delayed and cumulative. Doing an anti-candida diet will eliminate most food sensitivities. There may be 3 or 4 foods that simply don't agree with you, even after completing your program, but they'll be very easy to identify when you reintroduce them after the cleanse. Food allergies and sensitivities arise when your gut is imbalanced and maldigestion occurs from consuming refined, depleted, and processed food. Large quantities of undigested food particles that irritate and pass through the GI tract's lining can cause an allergic reaction in the bloodstream. In addition to cow's milk, the most common food allergens are corn, soy, citrus fruits, chocolate, eggs, nightshade vegetables, eggplant, peppers, potatoes, tomatoes, and gluten. Allergies to certain fruits and nuts can also arise when your digestive system is out of balance. Before starting my program, you may have no clue about what's causing your symptoms, because the reaction can be delayed for a day or two. And eating a food with multiple ingredients makes it hard to figure out what's causing the reaction. But when you heal your gut and strengthen your intestinal lining and immunity by eliminating your candida overgrowth, you'll find that you have fewer food sensitivities. Or what was really bothering you becomes obvious because you'll add back foods one at a time. Soy is one of the more common allergens I'm asked about because it's been the topic of much debate recently. In America, the market is flooded with genetically modified soy foods, like processed tofu and soy protein powders, which research has shown may be harmful to your body. However, fermented soy products, such as miso and tempeh, are more digestible, and they are high in essential amino acids and B vitamins. Unfortunately, fermented soy products are not allowed on an anti-candida diet because they can aggravate candida. A lot of people are allergic to soy and experience gas and bloating when they eat it. If you have this reaction, I recommend avoiding all soy products. There are also studies that say large amounts of soy protein can disrupt thyroid function. Because the jury is still out on whether soy is good or bad for you, I feel it is best to stay away from it. In my experience, the best cure for food allergies and intolerances is abstinence. If you suffer from allergies or food sensitivities, eliminate trigger foods for at least 1 to 3 months to rid the body of inflammatory allergic reactions, which may include itchiness, hives, rapid heartbeat, fatigue, constipation, diarrhea, or canker sores. After a month, you can slowly begin to add trigger foods back into your diet. Your body will tell you if it likes them or not. If your body reacts, then you know to stay away from those foods or to eat them in moderation only. Variety is another way to avoid allergic and intolerance reactions. There are plenty of choices in each food group to ensure that you are not eating the same thing day after day. 9. Gluten. White flour, rye, most oats, due to cross-contamination, barley, spelt, kamut, triticale, and wheat contain gluten, a protein complex that is abrasive to the GI tract and can strip its villi, the hair-like projections attached to the intestinal walls that help to absorb nutrients and keep the gut clean of yeast and bacteria. In addition, wheat has been hybridized and is subject to a process known as gluten deamidation, in which it is converted to wheat isolates. These are used as binders and emulsifiers in foods, including meat products, sauces, soups, and some beverages. The isolates are more detrimental than gluten in native wheat and can cause inflammation in the body. You can certainly have an allergy or sensitivity to gluten or soy, but because there's so much emerging data on gluten's relationship to candidiasis, and in the past 10 years, I've seen more clients with gluten intolerance and celiac disease than ever before. I wanted to discuss this separately. A 2013 study, published in the peer-reviewed medical journal Lancet, finds that Candida albicans may act as a trigger in the onset of celiac disease in those who are genetically susceptible. There is a protein in C. albicans known as HWP1, whose structure is similar to that of gluten. When a Candida infection is present in the gut, it can set off an immune system reaction to HWP1, which in turn causes an allergic reaction to gluten. Several medical researchers have examined the link between gluten sensitivity and neurodegenerative conditions as well. In a 2010 Lancet Neurology article titled "Gluten Sensitivity from Gut to Brain," Dr. Marios Hadjivasilou and his colleagues concluded, "Gluten sensitivity is a systemic autoimmune disease with diverse manifestations. This disorder is characterized by abnormal immunological responsiveness to ingested gluten in genetically susceptible individuals. Celiac disease, or gluten-sensitive enteropathy, is only one aspect of a range of possible manifestations of gluten sensitivity. Although neurological manifestations in patients with established celiac disease have been reported since 1966, it was not until 30 years later that in some individuals, gluten sensitivity was shown to manifest solely with neurological dysfunction. Interestingly, part of Hadjivasilou's study revealed a segment of patients who had white matter lesions on the brain or spinal cord that were similar to those found in patients with multiple sclerosis. If you want to know if you are gluten intolerant and/or are having autoimmune responses, you can contact Cyrax Laboratories, CyraxLabs.com. Their antibody array 3 tests your transglutaminase reactivity, and their antibody array 4 lets you know if you have cross-reactivity to foods other than gluten. There is a strong relationship between transglutaminases testing positive and autoimmune responses. Those who test positive for transglutaminase and/or celiac disease must avoid gluten permanently. If you choose to get tested, I'd recommend waiting until after your 90-day program, when inflammation will be reduced, to allow for better accuracy. 10. Artificial sweeteners and sugar alcohols. Artificial sweeteners, such as aspartame, acesulfame potassium, saccharin, and sucralose, are often promoted as an alternative to sugar for those who want to lose weight or eliminate sugar from their diets. But diet sodas and food products that contain these artificial sweeteners are very damaging to the body. The chemicals used to create these sweeteners, or to change the molecular structure of sugar to create them, are known carcinogens. Aspartame, a known neurotoxin, has been linked to neurological symptoms and conditions such as blurred vision, headaches, dizziness, memory loss, numbness, MS, ALS, and Parkinson's disease. Sugar alcohols, such as erythritol, maltitol, mannitol, sorbitol, and xylitol, are rising in popularity because they are not as damaging to the body as artificial sweeteners. Ironically, these are neither sugars nor alcohols. They are carbohydrates with a chemical structure that partially resembles sugar and partially resembles alcohol, but they don't contain ethanol, as do alcoholic beverages. They are incompletely absorbed and metabolized by the body, and consequently contribute fewer calories than most sugars. However, because they are not fully absorbed, they can ferment in the intestines and cause bloating, gas, and diarrhea. Of the sugar alcohols listed above, I prefer xylitol in small amounts, because it is made by our bodies in the metabolism of carbohydrates. It raises oral pH to be more alkaline when ingested, and it is antimicrobial. Commercial xylitol is obtained from corn or the bark of birch trees. I prefer the latter to avoid products made with genetically modified corn. I suggest taking it only in small amounts, under 1 teaspoon, not daily, for 2 reasons. Xylitol is a carbohydrate, which means it will feed Candida if used in large quantities. And although it is obtained from a natural source, it is chemically processed. Any artificial sweetener or sugar alcohol consumed in moderate to large quantities is toxic to the body. 10 food rules to keep Candida at bay. I know what you're thinking. So what should I eat and drink? A healthy diet, on and off my plan, looks like this. 60% organic vegetables, 20% organic animal protein, 15% gluten-free whole grains, and 5% organic fruits, nuts, seeds, beans, and legumes, once or twice a week, and unrefined oils. As you can tell, this is a very plant-based diet, because a diet low in carbs keeps Candida under control. Another major benefit is that fruits, vegetables, and plant foods are abundant in phytochemicals, which help prevent cancer and reverse disease. The most important vegetables to eat daily are dark green leafy vegetables, such as spinach, watercress, collard greens, mustard greens, turnip greens, dandelion greens, arugula, baby greens, bok choy, and kale, and sprouts. They are filled with vitamins and minerals, especially B6 and magnesium, which are required for many metabolic processes. Cruciferous vegetables, such as broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and cauliflower, contain natural compounds that assist with healthy liver function. I do like the right animal proteins, because they contain all the amino acids required to keep your body functioning. Finally, raw nuts and seeds contain essential fatty acids needed for the cellular membrane around each cell. 1. Go organic. The synthetic pesticides, fungicides, and herbicides used to treat conventionally grown food, including genetically modified foods, are carcinogenic, and they negatively affect the microbiome and gut lining, creating the underlying conditions for yeast overgrowth. While science hasn't fully disclosed all the negative effects that GMO foods may have on our bodies, it's best to avoid them. Genetically altered foods are filled with herbicides, which can damage our bodies. Studies link GMOs to kidney and liver damage, allergies, gastric disturbances, and cancer. 80% of U.S. corn and soy is genetically modified, and GMO corn is the base that we are using to feed all non-organic livestock and fish. One of the best ways to avoid chemicals and get the best quality nutrients possible is to support certified organic farmers and eat organic fruits, vegetables, meats, and dairy products. These foods are slightly more expensive, but your health is worth the investment. Quality outweighs convenience when it comes to healing your body. Be sure to wash all your fruits and vegetables with a little soap and water, or a natural fruit and vegetable wash, which you can find in the health food store. Animal protein. When consuming organic animal protein, eat small amounts, 2 to 4 ounces per serving, at one time for optimal digestion, every day. One of the reasons I encourage animal protein is that it breaks down into amino acids when it's digested, and your body needs amino acids to regenerate and repair cells, tissues, and organs. Consuming meat also helps to keep blood sugar levels balanced. Eating animal protein fewer than 3 times a week can create deficiencies in your body, such as fatigue, muscle mass loss, anemia, joint pain, and moodiness. When it comes to choosing organic animal proteins, remember that lean options, such as chicken, turkey, eggs, and fish, are best. Some do well with red meat. Lamb, buffalo, bison, and grass-fed beef are good choices. For those leaning toward vegetarianism, I suggest animal protein a minimum of 3 times a week. When choosing meat, as much as possible, make sure it is from free-range animals, not given hormones, and either grass-fed or given vegetarian and antibiotic and GMO-free feed. Free-range chickens are not confined in small cages and may have a little more room to move around than chickens raised on factory farms. However, their conditions are not necessarily humane or sanitary, and they are often kept in crowded sheds or lots. Ideally, the best meat to eat is from pasture-raised animals who are truly free to roam outdoors. Eggs are also a good source of protein, and best prepared poached, soft-boiled, sunny-side-up, or hard-boiled. One thing to know about red meat is that it contains high concentrations of saturated fat that can increase inflammation, but is usually tolerable in small amounts. If you do eat it, choose meat from grass-fed animals, such as bison and lamb, and eat it only once a week. Listen to your body. If you're craving meat, it could mean you're iron deficient. Blood type O's particularly crave more red meat. When preparing red meat, cook it rare to medium rare, as this leaves some active enzymes to help you digest it. It's best to eat meat with vegetables rather than starches, beans, and grains to make it less acidic and easier to digest. If you are still not digesting the meat well, you can try taking a protein digestive enzyme that contains hydrochloric acid, HCl, and pepsin. All fish contain some heavy metals, yet their biggest benefit, as a good source of omega-3 fatty acids, outweighs this. Wild-caught salmon, trout, halibut, cod, sole, and most other white fish are great in moderation. Vegetables. Organic vegetables are loaded with phytochemicals, which your body needs to help it regenerate. Over 4,000 such compounds have been found in plants, and some of the more common include beta-carotenoids, found in green and yellow vegetables, benefit the skin, bones, and immune system. Lycopene, abundant in tomatoes, red peppers, and pink grapefruit, is essential to heart health. Lutein, a deep yellow pigment found in leafy greens, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts, is related to eye and heart health. The anthocyanidins found in berries and onions contribute to the health of your heart and blood vessels. Because vegetables have alkalinizing properties, they help reduce acidity in your body, which reduces inflammation. Ideally, 60% of your daily diet should be comprised of vegetables. Green leafy vegetables are among the most nutrient-dense, and I recommend eating them every day. And since cooking destroys important enzymes that your body needs for digesting and assimilating foods, the more raw vegetables and fruits you eat, the more enzymes and nutrients your body will take in. However, if your digestion is out of balance, you might find that initially, for about 1 or 2 months, you'll feel best eating only steamed or cooked vegetables, and then gradually increasing your raw food intake with each meal, taking digestive enzymes along with both. Culinary herbs also contain valuable phytochemicals, such as vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, and are used to ease heartburn and headaches. Remember to include fresh herbs in your meals whenever possible. Last, don't forget to incorporate sea vegetables, such as arame, kelp, dulse, nori, wakame, and sea cabbage, which are rich in minerals, including iodine. Most of us are lacking in iodine, which is essential for optimal thyroid function. Sea vegetables also bind with heavy metals and radioactive toxins and move them out of the body, making them a great choice when you are detoxing. Here's a list of the primary benefits of common culinary herbs. You may also view this table on the enhancement PDF. Primary benefits of common culinary herbs. Cilantro. High in vitamin K, essential for bone and blood health, helping in the removal of heavy metals and blood clotting. Rosemary. Rich in antioxidants that fight inflammation and fungus. High in vitamins A and C. Parsley. High in vitamins B1, B3, and C. Oregano. Antibacterial and antifungal properties. Thyme. Rich in antioxidants and contains antiseptic and antifungal characteristics. Basil. High in flavonoids, antioxidants, vitamins A and K, and calcium. Dill. High in calcium, niacin, and antioxidants.